Welcome back to the Child Discipleship Podcast. This is Melanie, and I'm so glad that we're going to spend time together today. The conversation that you're about to listen to is between Kelly Bartley, our Senior Director of Curriculum here at Awana, and Phil and Diane Comer, who describe themselves as first-generation Christians, who, when they were raising their kids, discovered the critical importance of discipleship strategies in the life of their family and implemented those and saw incredible fruit by the grace of God. They are passionate about equipping families to do the same thing. We talk a lot here at Awana about what it looks like to have the church and the parents side by side, discipling the children together. We offer an incredibly practical resource that you can share with your families called the Friday Family Email, which will provide simple, easy, implementable opportunities for families to gather together and have these incredible moments of discipleship together. But for now, here's that conversation.
For those who may be new to getting to know who are Phil and Diane Comer, would love for you to kind of start there. Can you tell us a little bit about you and the ministry that you do?
Yeah, sure. We'll try to keep it brief. You know, we've been married, it's going to be 45 years in a couple weeks. So neither one of us were believers growing up. We believed in God, but we had no clue who Jesus was. So we got saved in what's now known as the Jesus Movement. And I got baptized in 1973. Diane came to the Lord in this amazing church in California that had a huge children's ministry. And we were brand new Christians. And so when we fell in love and got married, we had not been raised in homes that whose goal was to raise passionate Jesus followers. You know, we had good parents, but none of them would have said they were following the way of Jesus. So this was all new to us. And so because we were first generation Christians, pretty quickly, as soon as Jean-Marc, our oldest, was born, we thought the greatest thing we'll ever do is raise our own kids to follow the way of Jesus. And Awana became part of that because that generation, we didn't know anything about the Bible. It was a belief in God. We didn't question the Ten Commandments, but we had no clue Jesus was. We didn't know the scriptures. So we were in churches where you memorize the Bible, dig into the verse. So we're reading through the Bible in a year. So we were doing that. And then Awana comes along and it's all about scripture memory. So we were all over it. And So our kids were in Awana Cubby, Sparks. I could sing all the songs, you know, Sparks for Jesus. Anyway, so we're big Awana fans. Anyway, but we never talked about starting a ministry to help parents do the same. It was our personal passion. I was a worship pastor for years and years and years. Music is my background. Then I started doing more preaching. And then there's a lot of years to cover here. So fast forward until 2004, We had the privilege of planting a church with our son, Jean-Marc. And that's a long story because we never talk about planting anything together. But we planted a church in Portland and God had gone before us. We realize now that we were on the reaping side of people who have been praying for a move of God amongst especially younger people in Portland. And so we were part of this church and God blessed it so abundantly. Many, many, many 20 something started coming. After 4 or 5 years, they were getting married, they were having children. And this became a multi-generational church. It grew quite large and half the church was over 30, half was under 30. So into it, 7 or 8 years, we handed the lead role to Jean-Marc, who was 30 at the time. And I was 60. And so we had a big discussion about what is dad going to do. And he's the one that said to us, I think you and mom need to teach on parenting. I think it's your legacy. And I never thought about legacy in my own life at all. I looked at other people that I thought were leaving a legacy, but we had already done some stuff about raising passionate Jesus followers. I taught us a couple messages on developing heart for God in your child. When we started this church, there were young moms everywhere, young moms like you. Mm-hmm. And so we started a thing on Tuesday mornings, just Diane taught the moms, called Hearts on Fire. There were 60 young moms there. We did childcare and Jean-Marc was getting ready to, Tammy was going to have their first son, Jude. And he said to me, Dad, I want to run sound for mom because I want to take notes. And when your son wants to take notes from his mom about raising children, like I could have died and gone to heaven right then.
Sure.
And so it became part of our church. But Diane finished that and you said.
And what? Yeah, I finished maybe, it was maybe like 10 weeks. And I said, Phil, I never want to do this again without you, because I feel like I'm telling half the story. I'm putting this burden on moms who are going home and telling their husbands about it. And we were so much of a team that it felt unfair. It felt like I'm giving them half the story. So I thought that meant by the next year, Phil and I would be teaching together. But this church was just, there was a real revival, a pocket of revival going on. And the church was growing so quickly that it took us many years, actually, not until we really handed the main leadership role to John Mark that we felt like, okay, now we can have some time to really invest in parents. And like Phil said, that had never been our intention. But when you grow up with no background of faith like we did, you're really starting really at ground zero, trying to think of how in the world do I pass my faith on to the next generation? Mm. Of course, we were afraid watching so many kids in the church walk away from God. And so it was our personal passion to raise our four kids to love and follow Jesus and to really know him and have an intelligent faith. But we never talked about, you know, teaching other parents. We thought somebody from a long line of generations after generations of Christian family, they're the ones that ought to teach it.
But we were drafted.
We were drafted
by the Lord, and we're very
grateful. You had your calling.
We knew we had to get the fathers involved. Yeah. So anyway, so this day comes, and the elders said, yes, you need to do this. The need is massive. You need to just take 6 months, write it, do it in our own church. You're going to start getting asked to do in other churches. You're going to have to start a nonprofit. They had vision. And so we spent 6 months writing it, and it was a learning curve. But
and yeah, we, as we were studying, really diving in deeply, we realized how much we wish we had understood some of the stuff we were now studying. Our youngest was in college at that point, and we were saying, oh, if we'd only understood this. So we really started getting excited about teaching parents what we had not known when we were raising our kids.
Yeah. So anyway, we did the first conference and we had to turn people away. There was such a hunger for it. We had more than 500 people show up. We had several hundred on the waiting list. We had to do it again. We started getting invited. We realized, oh, this is a huge need. Parents who once you are truly walking with Jesus and he is your king and you love him and you have your first child, what you want more than anything is for that son or daughter to grow up and love Jesus like you love Jesus. Mm. And I came across 3 John 4. I have no greater joy than this to hear of my children walking in the truth. So we had all these young parents who had a revival happen, many of them at our church, and they now wanted this for their kids. And so that's why the book that eventually became a book that Diane wrote, published by Zondervan, is called Raising Passionate Jesus Followers. So anyway, we just started doing conferences all over the place and other countries. And then Diane was able to write our book and we launched Intentional Parents International. And that's what we're giving the greater amount of our time and attention to, is to help parents like you raise the next generation of passionate Jesus followers so that they can raise the next generation of passionate Jesus followers. It's exactly been God's plan all along. It's all over the scriptures in Psalm 78 and Deuteronomy 6. And we're just coming alongside as a mom and dad and grandfather. And we have, 7 grandkids, soon to be 9 this year. And now we're able to look at our kids walking with the Lord by the grace of God, now leading their kids to the Lord. And your cup is just overflowing. So that's what we're doing. That's what we're giving our lives to. That's where Intentional Parents International came out of. Our mission, I'm done here. Just our mission statement is to bring biblical hope and practical help to parents all over the world in their God-given task of raising the next generation of passionate Jesus followers. So we just want to help. We want to talk about the mistakes we made. Hey, don't do that. We did that. We blew it. We had to ask forgiveness. And these are some things that work. So
There you have. What a gift. Well, thanks for sharing that too. And I'm sure I can just imagine, Diane, how that filled your heart when your son was there taking notes from you, getting to talk on parenting. What a gift that must be.
Humbling at the same time, because very aware that they're very aware of all the mistakes you made in the process of learning.
In fact, before we put it together, we called our kids together and asked them, what did we do right and what did we do wrong, right? And
yes, and they were very glad to answer that question.
Especially what we did wrong.
I'm sure.
A good thing for our family to be able to look back now and say, okay, that was a mistake. That was based on fear and not on faith in God, and to humbly apologize to our kids. And I think really every parent needs to be prepared for that day to do that, not to sweep it under the carpet, to say, you know, I really lost my cool there and it wasn't your fault. It was on me. And be able to just go back and be honest and real with your kids. I think it's amazingly healing. Kids want to forgive their parents and they want help and they want to move forward. So when parents open up their hearts to do that, it's just amazing the kind of spiritual friendship that you can have together, because they're making their own mistakes now.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'd love to talk a little bit more about what you were just saying. You know, in your book, you talk about laying the foundation, and then doing the framing and the functional systems and completing the finish work and sort of all the stages that you go through. We have some parents or ministry leaders who are coaching and training and leading parents who may be like you, first generational Christians or new to the faith. And they may have kids who are already kind of far along and just where they are in their development and their ages. Obviously, ideal is catching them from the beginning, right? Yes. That very first stage. But what would you say to parents or ministry leaders who are leading parents, how they could encourage and coach? You know, they might be in those teen years and they're trying to now start to disciple when, you know, worldly foundations have already been laid all these years. What would your advice be for parents in that stage?
First thing that comes to mind is a phrase I heard from another pastor. You know, there's nothing new under the sun. Some of the best stuff I find are from people wiser who've gone before. But I heard this phrase once: you can't pass on what you don't possess. Hmm. So the first thing I would say to any parent is, are you a passionate Jesus follower yourself? Because if you are, it's at the core of your very being. I live to walk with God, to follow him. It's not my will be done, God bless my plans, but your will be done in my life. When you're living that way, then you can go to your kids and they're not going to hear you saying one thing and not living it, right? So I think it starts with the parent. Am I truly walking with the Lord? And if that's not true, then that can be changed in an instant. You know, you realize, you know what? I'm on the wrong path. I'm on that broad path that Jesus said leads to destruction. There's a narrow path that leads to life. I want to get on the narrow path. And then, you know, starting young is the best, you know, and that's mostly really our calling, is to help parents with young kids, like start as early as you can. And then this is how you can, you know, continue the path all the way through. You're bringing up, what if, you know, someone's a teenager and you go, wow, I didn't know all this. I wasn't even a Christian. Or honestly, I wasn't walking with God, but now I'm in this church, or I'm just following Awana, and man, my whole life being changed. And now what do I do? And I think that's where, you know, you have to sit down with your kids and just have a conversation. Diane likes to say that we parent out of
relationship.
So yeah. No one has more influence on their children than a mother and a father, for good or for bad. And so you can sit down with them as their parent in love and just say, you know what, these are some things that I've realized in my own life need to happen, and I want to see them happen in our family. And it's a conversation. Yeah.
And that was really my story growing up. My parents didn't know the Lord. I came first when I was 15. I heard the gospel. And within a couple of years, my whole family started following Jesus. But it was, I had a very strange relationship with my mom as a teenager. But then I began to see the Holy Spirit actually transform her into a different person. And there was probably nothing more powerful to me than, mom wasn't really ready to teach me, but the fact that I saw God change my mom, who I thought was, you know, a teenager, my enemy at the time, was what really cemented my walk with God from being just a social thing, because I loved these Jesus following teenagers, to this is for real. If God can change my mom, then God is so powerful, he can do anything. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what parents need to remember. The kids are watching you change, be transformed into the image of Christ. And you're going to make tons of mistakes. But if they see you, then actually humble yourself and apologize and say, I'm trying to follow Jesus. And it's one step forward, two steps back. Teenagers get that, whether they're walking with the Lord themselves yet or not. But just allowing your life to be open enough to be able to see changes being actually happened by the fact that you are now turned around and following the way of life, that is so powerful.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, a couple of thoughts just in our book, because we get asked this question.
Hmm.
I didn't know this stuff when I started raising my kids. What do I do? So we have an appendix in our book called Retrofitting. Like you're remodeling a house, what do? You have to go back down to the studs. You have to do some things differently. So that might be helpful to some people. But this is where the church comes in too. Like there's no perfect family. There's no perfect father except our Father in heaven. And sometimes you're in a home where the mom is really walking with Jesus, but the father's not. This is where the church comes in. So you said, what can leaders do? Well, you know, you figure out pretty quickly which kids have a mom and a dad that are truly living the life, following the way, and their kids are, you know, walking with Jesus, and which ones don't have that at home. And that's where you can become a father and a mother. That's where the church comes in. That's where Awana is so helpful, writing resources for the church, because it's a partnership. Like our youngest son was our youth pastor for many years. And I remember one time he was teary-eyed because there was a kid in his youth group that he loved so deeply. And he was even though he was only in his 20s himself, he was fathering this high school boy, but crying, knowing what he was going home to. And he said, I can't, Dad, fix the problem in the home, but I can help. And so I think that leaders, we're shepherds. We're shepherds and shepherdesses, so we can help.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, I think what you're saying there, Phil, speaks to one of the things that we have discussions about all the time here at Awana is that stalemate a little bit between the home and the church. There's a little bit of the church is like, it's the home's responsibility. And the home is like, oh, the church has to give us, you know, it's their responsibility. And there's a little bit of almost that pointing fingers and who ultimately is responsible for the discipleship of children. So I'd love to hear, you know, I already shared some of that too, of the parents and then the church really coming alongside, but what would you say to, you know, ministry leaders, how they could best educate, encourage and equip parents as they're on this discipleship journey?
Yeah, well, I think for leaders, you've got to help the parents see that this is not a burden to bear. It's a joyful responsibility. These kids are a gift. Psalm 127 says children are a gift from the Lord. Well, if the Lord of all the universe gives me, you have three boys, right? You have three gifts.
Yes.
And they're a lot of work, but they're a huge blessing, right?
Yes.
They're gifts from God to be molded and also unfolded. Mm-hmm. They're unique. They're different. So I think when parents get this, like these kids were given to us.
Yeah.
And, you know, that to me, that's like, it's a very intelligent question, but the answer is both and. It's not one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
The church is the family of God. Jesus said, who's my brother? Who's my sister? Those who do the will of God. So the family, when Jesus came, it was enlarged, but he didn't diss the nuclear family. The last thing he did before he said it is finished was he said, John, behold your mother. He took care of his mom.
Mm.
Behold your mother, you know, behold your son. So he said, John, you're now going to take care of my mom, Mary. I'm going to be with my father. And so it's both. It's the nuclear family and it's the family of God. But as far as like ultimately who has responsibility, I think that's clear from Deuteronomy 6. It's the parents. Okay. God doesn't say, take your kid to temple or to synagogue and the priest will raise him. You know, it says, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. I'm commanding these words shall be on your heart and you, he's talking to the parents, shall teach them diligently to your sons and talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down and when you rise up. Well, your kid would have to live at the church for that to happen. you know, because so, he's going to rise up in your house. So it's obviously the parents are to live this out and do it. But then the church is this loud amen and reinforcement. And none of us have all wisdom. Our kids needed other godly men, other godly women, brothers, sisters, aunts and uncles in the church. And so, you know, it's a both and.
Yeah, and I would agree, even from infancy, you know, we're learning now so much about the brain in the last few years and how it really relates to the early years of a child's life. I just felt that our kids had an amazing benefit by even going to the church nursery as babies and toddlers and finding out that there were other people who loved them and could take care of them. And that secure attachment that we want for our children happens at church, because you have a bunch of other people there who are maybe even serving in the nursery or serving as a fourth grade Sunday school teacher who passionately love Jesus and feel called to care for his little ones. And they form a bond with them that people out in the world, they don't have that. They don't get that. So I felt like our children were uniquely mentored from the day we first took them to church by all these people who really loved them and loved them well. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know how, you know, I am concerned for families that many of whom post-COVID have not made it back into the church on a regular basis. And not just going to church and watching church happen, but actually being part of the family of the church, where you're spending time together outside of church and you're looking forward to meeting each other there and you're talking about what you're learning. I feel like that is so essential to raise kids who continue to follow Jesus on through college and early career and for the rest of their lives. So it is both and. We just, you know, what was it, that book that takes a village? I think it takes a church to raise a really strong, resilient follower of Jesus who is not going to melt down when the first sort of opposition comes. And you are all raising your children in a time of a lot of opposition and a lot of really hard to answer questions that require wisdom. And when the church rallies around that message and around your children, it's such a strengthening force.
Mm. So there's, you spoke to some of this too, of there's a lot of parents who feel like, I'm not sure where to start. I love the story you shared of seeing the transformation in your mom and feeling like you don't necessarily have to have all the answers, but being able to see what it's like lived out. And then obviously you shared it taking a village and getting the community of the church. Is there more that you would say to that, to parents who are feeling intimidated of discipleship and really that, you know, it's a calling, but it's also a really high, a high order that God is asking for us to disciple our kids. And for those that feel almost a little stuck or unsure of what to do, I don't have all the answers. I don't know where to start. What would you say to those parents?
Yeah, what I would say is when somebody says, oh my gosh, we're having a baby, I don't know what, I say, well, they're not going to pop out as a toddler.
That's true, thankfully, right?
Popping out as a newborn, and it's a prolonged process. Well, becoming a disciple of Jesus is a lifelong quest, and none of us are going to become exactly like Jesus. Romans 8 says that, you know, we like to quote 8:28, for God calls all things work together for good of those who love God. But we skip the next verse talking about those whom he predestined to become conformed to the image of his son. In other words, God's doing an inner work to make you like Jesus. Mm-hmm. Well, nobody's come to me lately and said, you know, being around you is exactly like being around Jesus, because there's still some work to do in my life. But hopefully I'm becoming more and more like him in the way I treat people, the way I love my wife. And when I blow it, I ask her forgiveness. But it says in 1 John, we're not going to be like him till we see him face to face. So take the guilt off, take the pressure off, and you got to start somewhere. So just start. And we would say, start with the Bible. The Bible was given to us. It's the word of God. It's God-breathed. It's inspired. And just reading it is powerful. So, I mean, Diane's finishing a seminary degree right now. Tell them about Bill Clem. Who's this guy's, what, is he 40? Is he
probably early 40s.
42 years old. And tell him what he did. And he's a pastor, but he has young kids. So
in the middle of COVID, all of a sudden, these four kids, three teenage daughters and a 10-year-old son, are all stuck at home. Mm-hmm. You know, we couldn't go to school, couldn't do any of the stuff. Mm-hmm. And he realized how they were growing up, and he started reading the Bible. They start reading the Bible together as a family every morning. They meet before breakfast, get their day started, and he read through the Bible with his kids in about like the first 3 months of COVID. And all the questions, and it sent him studying and looking, and they've continued that tradition slower. They went through slower and just started reading the Bible together as a family. And he says it has transformed his entire family.
The kids wanted to keep doing it.
Yeah, the kids.
They weren't saying, are we done yet? They were like, so much so, they just had a retreat, a family retreat where they studied the book of Colossians, right?
Yeah.
Right?
That's like, amazing.
The kids wanted to, but it's just the power of the word of God.
Power. Well, and it's something that we undermine too, right? As we, specifically as Americans, I'm guilty of this, of like, we feel like we have to have all the answers and we can research things and pull tools, but God knows. He's given us these tools already in advance. So I love to hear that. That's amazing.
Yeah, and it's really good to say to your kid, I don't know the answer to that question. Yeah. Let's go find it.
Yeah.
Because then you're saying, I'm on the same journey you are. I don't have all the answers. And like, I don't know, I can ask my pastor about that one. That's a good question. Yeah. You know, I think, you know, the kids pick up your excitement to learn too. And, you know, where do you start? I mean, that's what we tried to write, because we didn't have any. So a couple other things I say, where else do you start? So that you start with the Bible and, you know, start with the Gospel of Mark. This is, I think, the easiest of the four to understand. John would probably be next, I would recommend. But then just start reading through the scriptures, and it's powerful. But the other one is mentors. So what we did, because our parents weren't following Jesus, we just looked around in the church, who has kids that are older than our kids? I want my family to turn out kind of like that. Like, I hope John kind of turns out like Dale Ties, and I hope that our daughter turns out like, and better, like, you know, Donna. And so we were able to find those people. And I always tell people, find them. It's not the person that's going to walk up to you and say, hey, by the way, you don't know me, my name's John, I've been watching you, you know, you're really doing a lousy job with your kids. Like, don't listen to that person, they've got an agenda. But if you find the right person, an abundance of counselors there's victory, invite them into your life. Mm-hmm. And then ask them to speak into your parenting. Okay. So that's what we do. We look for examples, which should be in your church. And then, you know, we say, take them out for coffee, you know, ask them questions. And so the mentoring aspect, and then there's the Bible aspect. And then what we tried to write in our book, and, you know, and this is not to push our book, but we tried to actually do this. Like, where do you begin? What do you do from birth to five? What do you do from 6 to 12? And that's kind of how we wrote it. We wrote what we were already teaching, but when we were tripping all over each other and getting in arguments, we're trying to figure out how to teach together. What did we finally figure out?
Well, that every stage or every new concept that we were writing about, Philip asked me, what did you need? What did you need to know? What would have really helped you if you had understood? And then we studied that and read that some more.
Yeah, what do you wish you knew when our kids were 5, 6, and 7 or 13, 14, and 15? Mm-hmm. What do you wish we had then? Yeah. What resources? And then because now our kids are all grown and married and walking with God. So we had to think back, and then we tried to write that, because parenting is not changed. The challenges are different, but the task is the same. And so
any resources geared to make the parent be the sort of spiritual hero with all their flaws is so strengthening, because of the statistics that now are showing that the kids who continue to follow Jesus through college, which is sadly a small percentage, the one key marker for them is that when they have questions and doubts and struggles, they go to their parents.
Like, where do I get started? Oh my gosh, if we ever lived in a day and age where there's resources at your fingertips, including Awana, which we're big fans of, then that's available. And so it just has to be, do I want that in my heart? And if I do, look for mentors, get in the scriptures for yourself, start reading the Bible to your kids, take resources and go for it, you know?
And probably essential, and every parent knows this, we have to quiet the noise in our lives that Jesus can be first and foremost.
Yeah.
We live in such a noisy time. And we could be out every night of the week, and we could miss every meal and just be grabbing things as we go out the door, and missing this prime opportunity to grow together as a family and to really watch our kids grow in their faith in Jesus. So it's an intentional effort. I mean, we have to do it. It's not going to just fall. Time is not going to fall in our laps. It's going to have to be carved out, and we're going to have to say no to things and to opportunities that we want to say yes to that are much easier than sitting down and talking about it. Yes.
Which is why John Mark wrote his book, The Ruthless
Elimination.
It's ruthless. It's coming at us so fast. If you just get on the train, you're going to miss these moments. You know, I mean, how many times have we all seen a family sitting in a restaurant and everybody's looking at their device?
Oh, yeah.
Play video games, mom's on the phone, not even talking to dad, and they're not having any time together. And it's you know, it's sad. It's sad to me when I see that picture. Then I mean, even with our marriage, I mean, like, all I have to do is look at my phone and she's saying, you're not interested in what you're I'm not, saying.
Yes.
So, that's a big part of it too, is choosing to, every yes has a corresponding no. And so when I say yes to certain things, I'm not going to have time to do something that maybe is more important that I should have said yes to. In order to say yes to that, I got to say no to this. So.
Well, and I think what you're saying too, in the social media world where everything looks perfect and wonderful, I think there's this idea of, you know, sitting around the table and it's going to, all the kids are engaged and we're going to have this beautiful discussion and no one's going to be fighting. And reality, at least in my home, and I imagine in many other homes, is you try to sit around the table and do something and it's someone's whining or someone makes fun of someone else or there's, you know, spilled milk or whatever it is. And it's messy. And it's so I love what you're saying of it's a lifelong process. So just because one time around the table didn't go well doesn't mean the next time will be that way, and just continue to go at it day in and day out.
Yeah. You're so right. I'm so glad you shared that.
Yeah.
Because there's no perfect family and there's no perfect parenting itself is not an exact science. The Bible doesn't have a passage. Read this chapter and do these 10 things and your kid will be perfect. No, it's a journey. And some of your most powerful parenting moments are unplanned. They happen in those moments where you're ready to do a devotional and one of your kids, you know, screams at the other kid, you know, that's a teaching moment, right? Yeah. Hey, no, we don't talk to each other that way in this house. Why? Because Jesus said this, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I'm really glad that you're saying that. Nobody has this all figured out. Nobody has it all together. Mm-hmm. But when Jesus is at the center of a mom and Jesus is at the center of a dad's heart and you're loving each other well. This is why marriage is so important to raising godly kids. Mm-hmm. You can't raise godly kids if your marriage, when you get in an argument and the kids know it, you come back and you tell your kids that you resolved it and you ask God to forgive you and mom and dad are okay. They grow up in that home where they know mom and dad are never leaving each other. I know they truly love God and they truly love me. You're going to make all kinds of mistakes. They're not even going to remember most of them because the mistake is going to be laid against 200 meals and hugs and loves and, you know, encouragement. And then Diane likes to say, when they get older, we've seen this happen, they have a delete button. They don't even remember some of what you thought were your biggest fails, right, babe?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are a lot of single parent households who are doing the same thing. You know, life happens and we live in the world after the fall. So, you know, we get this picture of the perfect little family, but it doesn't exist. I mean, our kids, there's not a laid back person.
Have any calm ones either. Oh, I have to ask you like personally, just so what that is, because that's my family too. There's no calm one. How does that happen?
We have a really intense family.
Everybody's opinionated. Everybody likes to present their case.
And everybody's right.
but there's a deep love for each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just was meeting with Brooke, our son-in-law, who's his biological father died about a year ago. And so now he's already been close to me, but I'm like now really his father. And he was telling me a story about sitting in a sauna this morning with his five-year-old having this great conversation. But, you know, we were just talking about how important this is, you know, the role that fathers have with their kids. And, you know, I just think it's precious every moment that we get. But he said, he was talking about his family of origin and our family that he got grafted into when he met Elizabeth when he was 17. And he said, if John Mark got cancer right now, we are all over it.
Yeah.
And I think, yes, we're opinionated and they'll disagree. And Sir Mark's telling his sister, you need to do this, you know. But man, if anybody has a need, that's right, the family is all over it. And I think that's what we all want, right? Mm-hmm. Is a family with God at the center and where the family knows how to solve conflict, how to ask forgiveness, how to work hard, how to be there for each other. Mm-hmm. And it's totally available to any follower of Jesus. And there's going to be times around the table where strong-willed kids are arguing. That's right. You know, Jesus said, in this world, you will have tribulation. It's going to be trouble. Trouble is one translation, but take courage. I'm with you. I've overcome the world. I'm here.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. That's beautiful. Well, I love what you said too, of I love that you spoke to single parent families as well too, because that's a big part of it. Of, you know, it's obviously ideal and beautiful when there gets to be two invested parents, but that's not everybody's story. But everybody, whether it's a single parent or two parents together, starting with scripture, getting mentors, getting that community around them. And our church leaders, that's something that they can encourage and help pull together those resources for parents to assist them in that journey. So thank you for your wisdom in that. Absolutely. Go ahead.
And even provide opportunities for the parents to know each other. And in America, it seems like we have to almost be given permission to be able to speak about things of the Spirit, about scriptures, mm-hmm. about Jesus. But as soon as we're kind of given cultural permission in a church setting, parents can dive in together and learn so much from each other too. And I think that's really an important part of raising godly kids, is cultivating those relationships. Maybe the people you go on vacation with, you know, maybe you don't have a Christian family, so they're the ones that you really are able to celebrate with in certain ways. So I think that's really important too. But yeah, I mean, when I first became a Christian, I didn't know much about my faith. I was 15, so I started reading as many biographies of great Christian men and women as I could. I just ate up their stories. And I'm amazed still of how many of the great men and women of our faith were brought up primarily by a mom, whose husband was absentee, was captain of a ship, or was just not in any way participating. I mean, some of the greatest historical figures owe their faith entirely to their mom. And I think that should encourage single moms that God can do great things from a woman whose heart is completely yielded to him. And it doesn't need the perfect little nuclear family with doting grandparents, spouting Bible verses. That's beautiful. We're trying to figure out now exactly what that looks like at our age. Yeah. But God just needs one willing parent to be able to really be a conduit to a relationship with Jesus.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Well, and that relieves some of that pressure a little too for some of our parents. We're feeling all the, I have to get it right, of just leaning in and allowing God to do the work.
The Child Discipleship Podcast is powered by Awana. Thanks to the donations of generous folks like you, Awana partners with 62,000 churches in 130 countries to make resilient disciples. When you give to Awana, you are investing in lasting faith, young people who will engage the culture with the gospel and fearlessly lead the church into the future. To make a donation to this mission, go to awana.org/donate. Subscribe to the podcast today so you never miss an episode, and check out the show notes of today's episode for relevant links from this conversation, as well as information about other podcasts from Awana. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next week.